A listener note, the safety information discussed in this podcast are our views based on our personal firsthand experiences. Each safety situation presents unique risks, and the solutions discussed in this podcast should not take the place of thorough risk assessments or evaluations based on your specific circumstances. Thank you. Welcome to Safe, Efficient, Profitable, a Worker Safety Podcast, where we break down real problems from real situations and discuss realistic solutions. And here's your host, owner of Allen Safety LLC and CHMM, Joe Allen.
Good day. This is Joe. This is episode 12, Confined Space. I don't think everyone on this podcast understands how much I love confined spaces, and I think it's one of the coolest things I've ever got to be part of. And the reason for that is I've got to work every kind of event you could almost, well, not every kind of event you imagine, but a lot of them. But anyway, I've got to work a lot of crazy events in confined space and done a lot of evaluations on a lot of different scenarios. And it's amazing to me how one subject can have so many different interpretations. So this podcast is about explaining to you how I break down some of those systems right at the beginning and how I get a scope of work or scope of idea for confined space at a location. And then I'll be doing another one, number 13, which we'll talk about some training and different ideas about do you need entry or rescue or what do you call it. But for this one today, we're going to talk about four main controls. That's going to be our program, our evaluations, our assessment, and our gear and what we need to purchase. And I bring this up because I write hundreds of procedures. My team writes hundreds of procedures on how to go into a confined space. But the very first thing I do before any confined space evaluation is I ask, what is the intent of the location I'm standing at's goal with this, as in confined space? Some places will have a program that says, we're going to never enter. Some places say they never enter, but they actually do because they call the item different than confined space so they can enter it. Some places will say, we only do certain kinds of entries, or we only do non-entry this, or we only do entry this, or we only do this kind of rescue. There's so many versions they go through. So what I start with is, okay, do you have a program? Great. I'm pretty sure that program, if I read it, may not have the way I'm thinking when I read it. It's going to have a lot of data, which is fine. But the first thing I'm looking for is I, Joe Allen, have about a 9-page document we created a few years ago. And it allows me to break down all of the way I'm going to manage confined space. But one of the first things I do is I decide how many spaces we think we have. And that statement alone can make people have lots of interesting conversations. It's amazing to me how people can interpret the same space at four different locations, and they all have different versions of what they think it is or is not. And I don't understand that. If it's a hazard and it's a space and it looks like it's a blue tank and they have the exact same blue tank somewhere else, it's still the same hazard, same space somewhere else. So it'd have to be in both their list of confined spaces. But even the start of identifying your list of confined space creates a lot of interesting conversation. So first thing I do is I try to get a list together. Now, I don't say that the list is an absolute. I write everything down first. You got 100 of them. Great. Let's write 100 of them potentials. And then we start breaking down each one on an evaluation or assessment of do we think it's confined space. Now, the traditional ways people say, is it big enough to enter, you know, limit restricted, and have a little checkbox. That's great. That's fine. But I'm more concerned about, is there a risk that allows the person not to get out in a timely manner? That's what I look at first. Not is it an entry or not into rescue. Not is it is a space or not. I spend more time on if person is inside that blue tank doing a task, how hard is it for them to get out on their own? And is there a risk that they would hurt themselves getting out? And if any of those answers say yes to me, I start breaking down, it could be a confined space. Maybe not permit yet, but be a confined space. And then the next thing I think about is, if they had a medical event, heart attack, slip, trip, and fall, the normal event that would happen in a hallway or a front office, and we would call 911 and medical would show up or fire departments would show up and they would do medical treatment on that person. If that person had that a medical event in that space, would people be willing to grab them out of there because it's not a confined space and medically treat them? I used to work in an ambulance crew when I was in the military, and ambulance crews do not always go in confined spaces. So if you're, say, it's not a confined space, and you ask an ambulance crew, your local emergency crew, would you go in there and get me? And they say, no, we think it's confined space. Well, then I would call it confined space. Because the end result is you have to be able to get medical care for the person having a medical event no matter what. So that's how I start breaking it down. Next thing I do is I will now say, okay, I have a list of confined spaces. Here's 100 of them. How many are we going to enter in here? What do you mean? Are we going to enter all of them? Well, we're going to allow people to enter all of them. Okay, are we really going to do all of them? Or are we going to do like 12? Well, we're mainly going to go into 12. Okay, so we're going to go into 12. And then are we going to contract out some of these? Well, yeah, probably 5 or 6 of them. And then what are we going to do with the rest of them? Well, we never enter them. Okay, so I'm going to take that list and I'm going to break down almost like a line item. The first ones that we're all going to go into here and we agree to, that's 1 through whatever. And then the next category is I'm going to contract out. Those are those. And then the next ones is the ones I'm going to go into. I've already started deciding how I'm going to label these spaces and what I'm going to do with them as I walk through. It makes me look at the space a little differently. Now, I have the space we always go into, number one. So we go into blue tank number one. If we get ready to go into blue tank number one, I'm going to say, how many people does it take to do that task? Okay. And how hard is it going to be to get in and out of there? Okay. And then I'm going to say, is it going to be entry, non-entry, rescue? I'm still thinking of all these while I'm trying to figure out this math equation, because what I'm trying to determine is, do they have the labor to do the task? Do they have the amount of equipment to do the task? Do they have the training to do the task? I'm not saying they currently have it. I'm saying those are all the questions that's going to have to happen now on the decision we're making for that space. It's amazing how many people will say we will enter into one of these 10 spaces or all 10. But when we start asking these questions, they don't go into as many of them as they want to because it's way bigger than they thought. You got to remember, I get hired to go help evaluate spaces. And it may have been something they go into all the time. And now that I called it confined space, they need to have all these other things. They say, well, I don't want to do that. Well, then now I'm looking at engineering. So now I will take the engineering controls I can try to think of for that space. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I give you an example. Blue tank, as I'm evaluating, getting ready to do assessment, has a pipe going from the outside of it to the inside of it. The blue tank valve for the pipe is on the inside of the tank. We're entering the space weekly to turn off the valve. My suggestion would be, yes, you enter it, and yes, it's confined space. Can we just put the valve on the outside of the tank so we don't have to go in there at all? And it's kind of like I've talked about with ladders or kind of like with these other hazards. Is there a way I can remove the hazard from engineering so I don't have to go in there? Because my first loyalty to my entire confined space program is not having to enter the space. My second loyalty is, if we have to enter the space, then can I reduce the amount of people that need to go, or can I reduce the amount of times we need to go? So if we go in there every week, can I make it so we only go in once a month? I don't like snakes. So I had a place years ago that opened up a pit, basically, and the floor was moving. I hadn't really seen that much in my career, so I thought that was different. And I made a comment, do you ever have to go in here? And they said, yes. I don't like going in where there's snakes at the bottom of the pit. And I said, so why do you go in here? We have to go in here every week to do X. And basically, that particular process was take a meter reading. So I said to myself, because I don't like snakes, and I don't like going to find space, I keep from it. What is every way in the world that I can brainstorm right now standing here that keeps me from going in there? Yes, I'm doing assessment. Yes, I'm evaluating hazards. Yes, I'm saying pros or cons, confined space or not. But what I'm really trying to figure out is, how do I go in there and not get bit by a snake? I could write snake as the hazard. I could write, how am I going to mitigate it? And what am I going to do? And I wear PPE. Do I need snake guards? And what kind of boots do I wear? And what kind of snake training do I need to get online? And do I watch those shows where people show how they grab the snake fast? And I watch videos. There's so many things I could do at that moment. Or I could say, hey, can we just like grab some binoculars or grab a camera and just take a picture of the meter reading device and just look at it in an office? And if I can I eliminate going in there? And they said, well, sure. Well, good. I don't have to go in there while the snake's there. That's my goal. Yes, I have a program. Yes, I have procedures. Yes, I have assessments. Yes, I have gear. Before I go down this path of all this craziness, I want to not go in the space. That's the first thing I want to do. Now, the next thing I want to do is now I'm going to do some kind of assessment. Again, we're at a lot of assessments, and I will write the assessment based on the practicality of what I've experienced in my career, not just about checking a box. And what I mean by that is, if we go into the space on a Tuesday, and we always go in at 3 in the afternoon, and there's only 2 people here at 3 in the afternoon, and this particular space needs 5 people, then maybe we need to talk about what day we go in, because that's really the control we're talking about right now. Well, I don't want to bring people in overtime because that costs more money. Okay, well then maybe we look at, can we change how often we go in? Can we change the piping design? Can we change the entry point? What can we do? I'm starting to break that down with that idea just even based on labor. Now I'm going to do it at night. Now it's dark. So now my assessment may have been, do the task, here's the hazard. But at night it's so dark and that's when they normally do it. The hazard assessment really needs to talk about lighting and flashlights and maybe headlamps and outside resources showing in light. Because realistically, they're going to do it Thursday night at 10 o'clock every night because that's when they have the labor, and not Tuesday in the afternoon. So what I really need to do is ask for the hazards, evaluate what I think the hazards are, and then think real time, when are they going to do this? How many people is it going to take? And what are these other hazards being introduced? I also don't like spiders. So if we open a pit and there's a whole bunch of spiders, it doesn't matter where you put my name on that permit. I don't want to be the one going in if there's spiders, especially the first one going in to clean it. So I still evaluate those hazards. I would put spiders or rattlesnakes. I would put those items on my assessment. It sounds a little out there, but if they're in there and it's a hazard to me, it's still a hazard. I will break down the assessment, evaluate as much as I can on it from every variable I can think of. And then I will think to myself, how do we get you out? If you go inside a space, the blue tank, and you have the medical event, and the people that have to remove you are the people on property due to timing, then we now have to train people, which means I need to add to my program training or add to my gear, what kind of gear I'm going to need for entry and into rescue. I've seen a lot of locations say we don't enter spaces, but they do. And then I see people say, well, it's not risky because we're only going there a couple feet. It doesn't change your medical event. And I also hear a lot of, well, the fire department or someone will come rescue us. Absolutely. But if you have a heart attack or you cut yourself with a grinder and you're bleeding, because of where locations can be, or the other side of the railroad tracks or the other side of the bridge, it could take longer than expected. And the idea is no one gets hurt and no one goes farther than getting hurt because of the circumstances they're in. So I spend a lot more time on the first aid CPR. I spend more time on how do we get them from point A to point B, which could be 2 feet outside of blue tanks. We can give them medical care. And I spend more time on if the resources get there, such as fire and ambulance later, then that's great. Then we've already started part of the process and they can take over. I spend most of my time on how to protect the employee who went in there and how to get them out and give them medical care. Everything else is just a plan on how I'm going to do that process. I will do the assessment. I actually write on the assessment. People think it's kind of weird too, but I actually write in there the dimensions of the opening. Now, the reason I do that is because I've got to get them out in a timely manner and make sure they're medically taken care of. If the person goes in a particular blue tank and the dimensions are small, and by the time they wear their coat, because it's cold, it makes them a tight fit to get into the blue tank, then the part of getting out of the blue tank for medical reasons makes it extremely difficult to do. So even the gear I'm going to buy and the width of it and the length of it and the style of it may change based on they go in during the winter, they wear a coat. This is who normally goes in. It's, you know, person one, and person one is kind of snug when they wear their coat going in there. I still have to be able to get them out. So my plan may be, am I going to cut off a jacket? Am I going to change the PPE so I have to wear a thick coat? Am I going to change the rescue gear that I'm going to use so we can get in and out of the space? But so I write the whole dimensions so that I know what I'm working with from a practicality standpoint. If I cannot get them out of the space and they got in there, or if it takes long time to get them out of the space, I've changed that risk variable and I don't want to do that. I want them to be 100% best odds I can of making sure they're okay. The other thing I look at is where their feet are going to go. If their feet are climbing in and out and they hit their head or slip, trip, and fall or cut their hand when they're climbing in there, I'm going to make a note that's a hazard. Now, is that important to me that they wear the right PPE? Absolutely. I still spend more time on not adding PPE. I spend more time on having the right equipment and the right process to do it. Do I need to change the boot out? Well, instead of changing the boot, can I just remove all the water in there? Can I open it up longer and let it dry? Can I use fan systems so it's not so slick if it's head water side? What are other things I can do besides just empty the vessel, put on some waterproof boots, and go in and hope I don't slip? I would like to try to remove as many hazards as I can, which means for time. We do that with a boiler. No one turns off a boiler and goes in 15 minutes later. They turn off the boiler, they let it cool down, and then they go in there. Well, that's great. So if they go in a boiler, though, the hazard is really not the confined space. The hazard is the lock and tag out. Because the confined space part's the easy part. They've already locked it out. It's already cooled. It's already open. Great. We do the entry. I can do a lot of boiler entries. Not that hard at all. The crazy part of the boiler entry is actually the lockout tag out. So on my assessment, I would spend more time on validating the lockout is right and validating it is cold and validating that I can get to and from the back in front of it. And is there other hazards around me as part of the assessment, not just the hazard climbing the boiler? Because that's the easiest part to do. So that's where I'm at with the assessments. I could go on for hours on how to do an assessment. I think they're one of the most critical parts of the entire confined space process. I don't believe that the rescues and the training and the programs are as crazy as the assessment part, because I train a lot of people and people can do some amazing things. But you have to first decide if it's a confined space. You have to first decide if it's really a hazard and how you're going to manage that. And until you do that, I don't know how you buy equipment and decide what training. If you decide you're only going to go in 10 spaces, then you only need training for 10 spaces. So if you say, well, this space requires SCBAs and requires all this other stuff. Yeah, but we don't go in there. So we just contract that out. Well, then I'll have to buy all that gear. I don't have to do fit test and physical. I don't have to train on it. I have to store it. We train on the 10 space we're going to go into, and the information and data we need to do that space is the assessment. And we use that assessment to help tell us the gear we need to buy. And now we take the gear we need to buy and we do the entry. I don't buy more gear and I don't add more things to the space. I don't have to. If it's 10 spaces and we go into it and we get it done, that's great. If we decide we're not going to go into the other spaces, then I don't have to do training for all those. We contract it or we manage it a different way. So I do spend a lot of time on that part of what are we really going to go into and what are we not, and start from there. All right. I appreciate you taking a few minutes today with me. And listen to the confined space part. Next episode will be episode 13. We'll be talking about a little more of the training and a little bit of entry, but assessment's the key for this one. Evaluate it correctly. And then to close with this, don't ever do an assessment by yourself. I treat assessments just like lockout tagout procedures. I don't like being the only person that writes them. I like having a couple people on there. If the end user's around, I like using it for that, just like I do lockout. If I have a measuring device, I measure the opening so that no one can say that space is this size or that size. No, I need to know what it is because I need to get all the right gear and the right equipment to do the task. The length of hose. Why do I need to link the hose? Because I measured it and said it's 10 foot long. Well, then I need about 14 foot of hose. So I'm going to break down all these variables as I go. So think of that when you do the assessment. Have another person there with you. Brainstorm as you go. If I'm standing next to you and we're doing an assessment, I'm going to ask you a whole lot of questions. So just be devoted to having an exciting time with me, and we're going through a bunch of questions. But for today, thank you for listening. I'm going to close out here. Y'all have a good day, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Safe, Efficient, Profitable, a Worker Safety Podcast. If you like what you heard here, please take a moment to write us a quick review, like, subscribe, and share our podcast so that others can find us. For questions or to request topics that you'd like to hear on our next show, please visit us at www.allen-safety.com. Thank you.
Safety first. Stay safe.